You know, you said there's lots of people who want to call in. I don't know if you got an email I sent to you a few days ago, but because you missed the first show with Ian,
yes,
I have two examples of where texts intersect with this whole UFO gray connection. And I debated on this, and I sent you the message, and I thought I'm going to do it. One of them concerns the possible connection between the grays and, believe it or not, the Antichrist. And the other one is a manuscript that is not published, so I won't really answer. I'm going to try not to answer too many questions about this manuscript, but it's going to blow your mind. All right? You know, all of this is referenced in the facade, and I have to say, for those listeners who really want to be able to clearly process what I'm going to say here, you've just got to read the facade. It gives you the necessary background. That being said,
the graves and the Antichrist.
Right. Ascension does a great job, again, with the cross-cultural work. And here's a good example of something that he references in the 12th planet. Not my specific connection, but he goes to the Greeks, the ancient Greeks. Now, their version of divine beings and their relationships with human women and so on and so forth,
right,
creating hybrids, that is the Titan story. Now, Titan in Greek is Titanos, T-I-T-A-N-O-S.
All
right. Titanos, curiously, has a homonym. Okay, the word is spelled the same way, but has a different meaning. Guess what the meaning is?
I couldn't possibly find it.
Gray.
Gray? Really, gray.
Now, there was a church father, Irenaeus. He's a very well-known church father, who was an apostle, a disciple of Polycarp, who was a disciple of John, who wrote the book of Revelation. Irenaeus, in some of his commentaries, believed, when he was talking about the number 666,
mm-hmm,
he actually thought that it was very plausible that the Antichrist would be a Nephilim-type descendant. And the reason was, is because if you take not Titanos, but the offspring, the divine rulers, you know, this whole idea of divine kingship in the ancient world, that the kings that we get are somehow they're put there by the gods. I mean, they believe this all the way up to Louis. It's like,
oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay? They refer to those individuals as Titan, T-E-I-T-A-N. If you plug in the numerical equivalent to Titan, and on my website I have all this, and this is from a University of Chicago book on the history of mathematics, so I'm not making it up. If you plug in the numerical equivalent to the name Titan, guess what it adds up to? 666.
Well, you know, if all of this is correct, Mike, it seems to me then, in the presence of extraterrestrial craft, if you happen to be a Northwest pilot who has something pacing your aircraft,
mm-hmm,
or if you're in your bedroom and a gray is about to abduct you and stick large, long, sharp things into your ear, whatever,
well, they're there to
then
help
you should be able to say, "Be gone in the name of Christ," and they should whisk away. Yes?
Here's another thing that makes me popular with, again, you know, people of faith. If that's the case, why can't we just say to any human attacker, any human evil, be gone in the name of Christ?
Well, because humans are not, humans are human. Right?
They're motivated from the same source.
They're motivated perhaps from a couple of sources.
Agreed. But the whole point is, why does this sphere of evil that would seek to harm human beings, why does this sphere of evil, why is it controllable by the simple pronouncement of a name as opposed to, you know, 95% of the other evil that goes around? I think this comes from, again, superstitious. I guess that's the best word, a superstitious view of what we would call spiritual warfare. In fact, in 2 Peter chapter 2, the New Testament, and Jude, there are warnings against, you know, specifically engaging certain beings, certain celestial beings, with words. Okay, and in fact, it actually says the angels. Here you have the hierarchy again. This time, the New Testament. It says the angels dare not bring accusation against the glorious ones, the celestial ones, the shining ones. So there you have the guys in the lower tier, the Malachim, saying, excuse us from engaging these other higher beings because we're essentially out of here. we're not going to tackle it. So I think that again, providentially, that can happen, that you can invoke the name of Christ and get a positive result, but I see no theological reason why it has to. The second thing I'd like to drop, and you're going to love this, Art. I have seen a text. Okay, it's unpublished. It's still being studied, so we don't know if it is authentic. It does exist. I've seen it. I've read it myself. Because of that, I'm not going to tell you the correct name of the manuscript. I'm not going to indulge callers that try to get out to the process of elimination. I'm not going to tell you where I saw it, who showed it to me, or anything like that. It's not on the Internet, okay? But there is a scroll out there.
Everything's on the Internet.
This is not on the Internet. Trust me.
Well, you've got to give us some idea of its origin. Before you begin using it, we have to have some idea.
It is rumored to come from the region of the Dead Sea. Okay, it is not part of the original scrolls collection. It is rumored. Again, what I've seen is a hand-drawn transcription of this. I have not seen the original text. Again, I know who's working on it. I don't want to give people headaches and problems and cause an international incident I have enough to worry about.
Mm.
But in this text, there is a phrase that says that Jerusalem was surrounded, in Hebrew, it's Al-Pei Shemeshot Tzevavot. In translation, that is, Jerusalem is surrounded and being attacked by thousands of sun disks.
Mm. Sun disks.
Now, sun disks. Bright, shiny disks. Things that reflect light. Shemeshot is the word for sun, it's plural. And Tzevavot is round, so you have round sun disks, sun things, attacking Jerusalem. This is a vision of the apocalypse.
Interpreted in many ways. Many people have said that a thermonuclear detonation approximates the sun.
Mm-hmm. And you can let your imagination go. Now, I'm not saying that again, it's not determined if it's authentic, but it is out there. And this is the kind of thing that the facade deals with. There are texts, there's even a text that describes what a fallen watcher looks like. The Watchers is the name that Enoch gives to the sons of God in Genesis 6 who cohabit with human women. There's one Dead Sea scroll, I can tell you this one because it's published. It's 4Q Amram from K4, and it says, behold, the guy's looking and he sees one of these sinister watchers, and he says, behold, the watcher's face was fearsome like a serpent. And I think that it's possible that what passes for reptilian beings, okay, in the UFO literature,
yes,
and what certain people say, that this is what they're looking at. It's the only text I know that describes what a fallen watcher looks like, serpentine. And this is the kind of thing that the facade goes into. And lots of stuff.
Again, though, Mike, in every case, and I've talked to so many people who have dealt with evil entities, put that in quotes, evil entities, and inevitably, every time, when they said, be gone in the name of our God, in the name of Jesus Christ,